Rusty Quill presents The Magnus Archives. Episode 29, Cheating Death.
Statement of Nathaniel Thorpe regarding his own mortality. Original statement given June 4th, 1972. Audio recording by Jonathan Sims, head archivist of the Magnus Institute, London. Statement begins. Are you interested in folk tales at all? I know I'm here to provide a statement of my own experience, and I will, but there's something so revealing in the stories that grow up in a culture, wouldn't you say? And I promise it will be relevant by the end. I can guarantee it's not in your library either, because as far as I know, this story has never been written down. I'd do it myself, but there's a reason you're having to write this for me. One of these days I'll get around to learning my letters. Probably. But I'll still wager, illiterate or not, that I can tell you a story you haven't heard before, though the themes are some that dance their way through many of the oldest folklore you can find. Death and games of chance. Well, if you want to win, anyway. Unless you fancy your chances of beating it at chess. But I'm getting ahead of myself. Once there was a soldier. A bold soldier. The sort you can find in any army, in any war, at any time. Fond of drink. Fond of dice. Fond of whatever nocturnal pleasures might be offered. He was bold as brass, yet bold is not the same as brave, and rarely did he take to the field of battle without somehow finding himself at the rear of the charge, where cannon and musket ball were less likely to find him. As I say, he could have been fighting anywhere, but this story is in New England, during the time of the Revolutionary War. Whether he was British or American or even French, it means nothing. What matters is that at the Battle of Bunker Hill, he found himself alone. The night before had been wasted hard carousing, and what money he had not lost betting on faro had quickly been spent on drinking and pleasant company. So it was that he took to the field of battle with his head already swimming and eyes a stinging red. He had neglected even to bring gunpowder enough to reload his rifle, having filled his pouch instead with playing cards. And with every boom of the cannon, the soldier's head pulsed in such pain that he thought himself shot. The smoke was coiled thick around him, and the acrid stench of gunpowder and blood made him retch. He fired his one and only shot, and it disappeared into the roiling fog of war. He tried to advance, but he did not know which way was towards the enemy, nor could he see any others amidst the chaos of battle, enemy or comrade. For all the muskets and cannons he could hear, it seemed he was alone. As he stood there, the soldier saw that some of the blood that fell into the sodden soil was his own. When he had been shot, he had no idea, but the pain that surged through him as he touched his wounded chest left no doubt. The bold soldier considered returning to his lines to find a doctor, but he remembered all too clearly the mouldering filth of the medical tents, the ranks of infected fools wailing out their last doomed cries. He would not die like that. He would not choke out some feeble plea for his mother in some grime-encrusted infirmary. He turned, threw down his rifle, and began to run. He did not know in which direction he was going, and simply prayed that it was not towards the enemy or the sea. Blood flowed freely from the ragged wound in his chest, and his breathing was labored, yet he pushed on. He ran until the mud turned to soil, and the soil turned to grass, until the smoke turned to fog and the fog turned to rain and dusk came upon him. Despite the balmy warmth of that June day, the night was bitterly cold. Perhaps it was the rain that pounded upon his tunic, or perhaps it was the beginnings of a fever. But when the soldier finally stopped running, he was so chilled that it took all the energy he had left in him not to collapse. He was soaked through, shivering violently, and very aware that if he did not find somewhere to take shelter from the elements, he was going to die. And not a quick, clean death from a pistol or a saber. A miserable, shivering death in some barren field near Boston. The soldier, whose boldness seemed to seep out with his blood, did not want to die. And here there is something to be said on death. Everyone fears death. Of course they do. Even the most devout must have some apprehension, for however confident they are in a life everlasting with their deity of choice, the concept of eternity is one that the mortal mind recoils from. Be it bliss, torment, or the senseless void, none can actually imagine what it is to die. So it's only right that all should have a healthy fear of it. There are some, though, for whom it is an enduring terror, who cannot even consider the inevitable termination of life without a deepest panic, and can think of nothing in life that could be worse than its end. The soldier was of this cloth, and upon feeling his time drawing to a close, he began to cast about in fear. He spied a farmhouse, dark and uninviting. The fighting nearby had likely scared off whoever lived there. Desperate to get out of the pouring rain, the soldier tried the doors and found them locked tight. He broke a window, but with his wound he did not have the strength to climb inside. In despair, he looked around for another entrance and spied the cellar door. It was not locked and lifted with surprising ease given how heavy the wood appeared. He collapsed inside, half crawling, half falling down the rough earthen steps, until he found himself lying there in the dark, dry warmth of the basement. The soldier lay there for some time, unmoving, eyes shut, listening to the driving New England rain beating down outside. He breathed deeply, ignoring the pain from his wounded chest, and tried to gather his thoughts. What was important, he considered briefly, was that at that moment, he was not dead. It was then he caught the scent of damp. Not the damp of wet earth after a hot day, but the cold damp of vaults and catacombs, slick with mold and glimmering nitre. He would have expected death to smell of decay, of rotting flesh and maggot meat, but it did not. And the soldier knew what it was immediately. Even before his eyes adjusted to the dark and looked to the table, before he saw the figure that sat there in a moth-eaten monk's robe, there was no reason to assume that what he saw was death, and not simply some forgotten corpse. But there was no doubt in the soldier's mind when he gazed upon it that he saw his doom embodied. Then it turned to look at the soldier, and what little resolve remained fled from his heart. He tried to run, but he got barely two steps before he collapsed again. Death waited patiently. To describe it as a skeleton would be to do death a disservice, for though the robe that sat in that chair contained only bones, it was not the skeleton that moved. It was death. The bones were old, so ancient and brittle that the slightest pressure or movement would have rendered them down to dust. They did move. Death was no more a skeleton than you are a woolen suit. Above all, it was old. Older than you could possibly dream. The soldier began to weep. He cried and begged Death not to take him. But Death was silent. Now, as long as there have been people and games, there have been tales of those who gambled with death, some as metaphor, some as myth, but the soldier had heard enough of these tales to make his own last desperate gamble. And he challenged death to a game. There was silence for several long minutes before it nodded its head. Reaching into its robe, Death pulled out three things. A chess knight, a domino, and a pair of dice, each scrimshawed out of old bone. The choice presented was clear, but the soldier had enough wit about him to shake his head and reach into his pouch. He laid the cards upon the table and asked Death if he knew how to play Pharaoh. Death paused, as though considering, before it nodded. "Very well," it said. "And if you win, you shall not die." He replaced his totems within the mouldering robe and pulled out instead a small hexagonal pharaoh token, likewise made of bone. The soldier, starting to feel bold again as the wood of the table warped and decayed into the 13 cards of a pharaoh board, pushed it to the side and told Death with the faintest hint of a smile that he had brought his own. From somewhere, Death produced a dealing box and, placing the playing cards within it, it began to deal. Pharaoh, or bucking the tiger, as the carnival hawkers would have it, is not a complicated game. Bets are placed upon the cards and the dealer draws one card for the players and one for themselves. Bets matching the player's card are doubled, bets matching the dealer's card are lost. There are a few other rules, of course, but if played honestly, then there is no betting game with fairer odds. The soldier had never before encountered an honest game. He had before him a small pile of ivory sticks, not unlike those used for betting in Mahjong, though the soldier had no knowledge of such a game. He knew that if his pile was gone, then his life was forfeit. The game was slow and deliberate, and the soldier could not have said if they played for hours, for days, or for months. The night outside showed no sign of ending, nor did the rain cease its drumming out a rhythm on the still open cellar door. The cards were placed slowly and deliberately by Death, and the soldier became more and more amazed with the revelation that this was the least crooked game of Pharaoh he had ever played. Still, there was little scope for him to cheat, as there was none of the shouting or crowds that served as a distraction in every gambling parlor. The relentless